Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Refugees, immigrants, and current events. By now, most people around the world have heard of the presidential executive order restricting travel to this country for people from a handful of Muslim-majority nations. The Trump administration has imposed what is widely being described as a ban imposed for security purposes. Muslims in this country and many who wish to come here are viewing the move with alarm, and it's having an impact in our region. Joining me in studio to talk about it, Anna Crossland, president and CEO of the International Institute. Jessica Mayo is co-director of MICA, the Migrant and Immigrant Community Action Project. Faizan Syed is executive director of the Council on American-Islamic Relations, or CARE, here in St. Louis. Thank you all so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you for having
Thank
us.
You. Nice to be
Let me ask each of you the same question. Anna Crossland, I'll start with you. What is the impact, as you see it here already, of the president's executive order?
Well, while there are many aspects to the actual executive order, the one that that we see having the most impact initially is on the limitations placed on refugee travel at this point, refugee relocation to St. Louis and other parts of America. The ban itself, the seven countries, it happened so fast that literally we had families, family reunification cases that were due to arrive this week, and the tickets were bought and the individuals were ready to come, and they simply were canceled at the last minute. So we had 60 arrivals this week expected, and after some changes in interpretation by the federal government, that allowed a few people to be able to come forward and continue who were not from the seven countries but still refugees. Of those, 67 have been allowed to come to the United States this week instead.
And we're hearing similar stories from all over the country, obviously.
Right.
Jessica, how about your perspective on this?
Sure. Well, we have clients. We do immigration law at our organization, and we have many clients who are really affected by this, clients who have family members overseas who have been going through the process of getting legal status for their families and getting visas for them for months or years, and now they are stranded overseas. Our clients here in the United States who are from those affected countries have also been informed that their cases will not be adjudicated during this time. So people who are applying for immigration status and, again, have often been in the process for a lot of years. There are also enforcement orders from our executive orders from Wednesday regarding enforcement that is affecting a lot of our clients. Those memos are kind of summarized a lot of times just as building a wall and stopping sanctuary cities, but they have a lot of enforcement effects that are already beginning. We've heard reports that ICE officers are stopping people based on the color of their skin when they go to pick up their children from school in some locations, that they've been checking papers for people entering courthouses, that there have been raids of ethnic stores to check people's papers. There are rumors of even more widespread enforcement action happening.
Who's doing the checking?
Immigration enforcement, ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement is generally who does that.
Not local police. They're not involved in any of this.
Not yet, but yeah. The orders did actually encourage agreements between the federal government and local police so that they can begin enforcing, which would have a really big impact on people who are victims of crimes but then are afraid to go forward.
You've also pointed out something we shouldn't lose sight of during our discussion. All the attention is being given to the so-called Muslim ban. However, others are affected by this, the Hispanic population, people coming from Latin America, Mexico, also very much affected by these orders.
Yes, very much so, from pretty much all over the world.
Yep. Faizan, let's go to you again. Your perspective on the impact here.
Well, first, I want to kind of jump and build off of what was already said. From the Muslim community, we're seeing this as the first step in fulfilling Donald Trump's promise of a total Muslim ban within inside the United States, that the people who are being affected are not just from those seven countries, but we just received a case last Friday of a Pakistani woman who was married to an American citizen, and on her way to the United States, she was actually stopped and held at O'Hare Airport for 2 days. And again, an airport is not a place that has beds. It doesn't have a place where they have regular meals and these types of things. And then she's only allowed to make one phone call, and then she was deported. It's creating really a lot of fear, anxiety within the American Muslim population and amongst immigrants and refugees all across the region as well. And I think, that's part of the purpose of this is to be vague enough and to allow law enforcement enough to really create this type of fear within this community in order to really create fear and suspicion amongst American Muslims and even amongst immigrants in general.
We all know this whole thing was perpetrated to bolster security in this country. What do you make of that? Is this likely to accomplish that?
This does in my opinion, does the complete opposite effect of supporting security. First of all, those people from the seven countries have not done any terror attack in this nation, and there hasn't been a death from any of those nations since 1975 in a terror attack. Beyond that, you know, you are less likely to be killed by a terrorist from the seven countries than you are by your clothes catching on fire or being killed by faulty furniture. So the argument of safety is really a paranoid argument that really has very little to no basis. And really what it's doing is it's, you know, pushing the administration's agenda to create an us versus them type of reality, that there are some good people, which are in essence Christians or Americans, and then everybody who's a foreigner, especially if they're Muslim, are people that we have to be suspicious of. And I think that's the effect is having on American society and even law enforcement society as well.
Jessica, your take on the security part of the story?
Sure. I think that these orders could have a really negative effect in a lot of ways, including those that you just mentioned. The Wednesday orders regarding enforcement also included publishing a list of crimes committed by immigrants in certain jurisdictions every week. This, again, is just going to contribute to that attitude of paranoia and hate towards the immigrant community, when in fact studies have shown that the immigrant population actually commits crimes at a lower rate than the general population. That, in conjunction with these orders that might start involving local police, will result in further victimization of that immigrant community that is then afraid to go to the police, whether it's domestic violence or employers who might be treating their employees the wrong way. It leads to this whole cycle of that sector of the population being much more at risk, which really puts all of our communities more at risk. We're all very much connected.
Anna?
Well, and I think that we would. It's very important that people also understand that we're not just talking about the safety of Americans on American soil, but we're talking about the safety of Americans around the world, because we have literally hundreds of thousands of people who are working, for instance, abroad right now, who have to be able to go back and forth, and in fact are involved in business endeavors in some of the countries that in fact include a lot of other Muslims at this point who may in fact have more of a history of terror in fact than these seven countries do, that large corporations in this country, particularly if they're oil focused, etc., they have a lot of people in the Middle East working right now. But even more so, there's a challenge right now with regards to safety for American military, who are particularly fighting, let's say, in Iraq and Afghanistan right now, where we have a substantial number of troops, because they have to be able to rely on the local population to be able to assist them in the war effort over there. And so they are interpreters and drivers and civil engineers that build the roads and doctors and dentists who patch up our troops in the hospital, etc. If we have such a strong stance on the issue of admitting the most vulnerable in the world, including from Muslim countries, and by that I mean the refugees, if we say no, not even to the refugees at this point, who are actually fleeing terror, they're not terrorists themselves, then it discourages those individuals to actually participate and assist our forces, because they also have no feeling at this point that if something were to go wrong and the war were to go south there, how would we, with these kinds of bans, be able to actually admit these people later? The sad part of the ban itself that came out on Friday is, for instance, that Iraqi SIVs are not part of the admissible group within special immigrant visa holders. And these are the people who worked with the American forces. Well, Afghans, there was a disclaimer for them, and they were able to still, some of them arrived this current week. Iraqis were not allowed as part of the total population. And so heck of a bad message at this point around the world.
Speaking of Iraqis, I recently spoke with Mohammed Saeed, who came to the United States from Iraq in 2010 on a Fulbright scholarship. He now lives in St. Louis and works as a researcher at Washington University. Although he applied for asylum and has a green card, he is worried about leaving the country under the new executive order. I asked him if he was also concerned about domestic travel.
I am worried about that. And the reason is because until a few days ago, it was unheard of for green card holders to be denied entry into the U.S. So it's not unimaginable now that if I get on a flight and the law changes suddenly while I'm on the air, and then I would have to face some consequences. And what's troubling me is that this would be something that I am doing everything I should be as a legal permanent resident here in the United States. And I feel that my freedom has been restricted because now I can't leave the country, and I worry about what's going to happen in the future. And it's all based on nothing that I did, but just based on where I was born. I don't think that's fair.
Do you feel you have any options in dealing with this situation?
No, I don't think so. Because, Don, I grew up in Iraq, and all of my life in Iraq, my freedom was restricted. Part of my life, I lived under a dictatorship. And then even after that, my political, religious, and personal freedoms were all restricted. So when I came to the U.S., I experienced freedom for the first time. And for me, when I get the green card, that was an amazing point in my life because I thought that I wouldn't have to worry about my freedom being restricted after that. But obviously, a few days ago, I was proven wrong. And I don't have any options because I can't go back to Iraq because I applied for asylum and I can't go back there. And so when I think of the U.S., it's my home. This is my home. And I don't want to leave. I want to stay here and build my family and help this country.
Are you concerned that the green card could be taken away?
Yes, I am worried about that now. And based on current laws, in 2 years, I will be eligible to become a citizen. And this is something I'm already so excited about and I'm looking forward to. I've already read all the instructions about how to do that. I looked up the exam and I took practice tests for the citizenship exam. And I also decided that I'm going to wear an American flag suit if they let me during the ceremony. But all of that, now I'm not sure if I would be allowed to do that. If the laws change, I'm not sure. Now this is something that I have to worry about.
That was Mohammed Saeed of St. Louis, an immigrant from Iraq. Faison, do you think that he is justified as concerned about the green card and the lack of protection it will afford him?
Yes, he should be concerned, and he's justified in it because we have had cases of people who have green cards who have also been detained or denied re-entry into the United States. And for your audience who may not know, a green card holder is just basically one step away of becoming a U.S. citizen. And for them to be denied is extremely, extremely troubling as well. So there's a lawsuit that's filed by the ACLU and another lawsuit filed by CARE against these executive orders, and they involve particularly people who have green cards who are detained and denied reentry. And as this lawsuit goes forward, we hope that the unconstitutional nature of the executive orders will become apparent and they won't be enforced.
Jessica, you're the lawyer in the room. What do you think about the legalities of this?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think all of his fears are very justified from a legal perspective. As was mentioned, LPRs have been blocked at the airport, and then that was lifted. But all of these executive orders are still being interpreted, and there are still questions of how they are being enforced and how much the enforcement will be subject to what the courts have said and how much the CBP and ICE will listen to the courts. We're also hearing that LPRs will still be receiving stricter scrutiny upon entry to the United States, even if right now it has been said that the executive order does not apply to them, that upon entry they may still be pulled for secondary inspection and face either lengthy delays or even being denied entrance. We also have heard that oath ceremonies have been descheduled for people from the 7 affected countries.
Oath ceremonies.
So people who have gone through the naturalization process and passed their exam and actually been scheduled to take their oath ceremony, and then they've received notices that they can no longer attend it, at least temporarily. So very real possibilities that at least for some period of time, people from those countries cannot become U.S. citizens, even though they meet all of the statutory requirements. There are also new draft executive orders that are circulating that will have even more possibilities for enforcing various aspects of people's status, even once they're LPRs.
And clearly much more to these orders than is generally being reported.
Yeah. I think that a cursory review of the executive order results many times from people saying, well, what's the big deal? You know, it's only 120 days. It's only 90 days. They're just checking. They want to check the vetting system, and they don't understand the complexity of issues that are put into place simply by making those changes. In the case of refugee resettlement, for instance, it is highly unlikely that even for countries that are cleared after 120 days, exclusive of the issue of the ongoing Syrian ban, for instance, it is very unlikely that on day 121 that refugees will start being able to come to the United States again. And that's because right now there is this really complex system of 13 steps of vetting that refugees have to be able to successfully negotiate to be able to get permission to come to the United States. Well, those steps, which are security clearances, only last for a certain period of time, with none of them lasting longer than 120 days. Mm-hmm. So when you cancel the flow for 120 days, all of the security clearances cancel at that point. And people who were in these steps that were taking 18 to 24 months to be able to clear are going to go back into the system and have to be re-vetted again.
Start all over
again. Right.
I have to take a break. Do we have a number? Do you have any idea how many people are impacted here by this in our region? Anybody?
It's hard to say, but I can tell you that last year of the refugees that we sponsored, probably about 600 of the 1,100 were of Muslim background, although not necessarily from only the 7 countries that were impacted.
And, of course, they have families. They have families here,
right.
And they have families who want to come here.
Well, about 30% of the family of the people we're sponsoring now are actually what are called family reunifications.
Yes. Let me take that break now. We'll come back and continue the conversation. We're talking about the executive order, of course, dealing with immigrants and refugees from the Muslim-majority nations we've been hearing so much about. My guest in studio, Anna Crossland, President and CEO of the International Institute, Jessica May, is co-director of MICA, the Migrant and Immigrant Community Action Project. Faizan Syed is executive director of the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, in St. Louis. Back in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Anna Crossland, Jessica Mayo, and Faizan Syed. Anna, let me come back to you. There have been a number of protests in our community against mm-hmm. the president's order. Are you heartened at all by the public response that you've seen?
I have. While we aren't formally involved in the protest, we believe that people have an opportunity right now to exercise their First Amendment rights, which is to gather and to make note of things that that they think are not part of what they believe in. And so I thank all the people who are getting out there and protesting in this kind of a manner. And the fact that it's peaceful protests, I think, say to the opposition that we're not about rabble-rousing. We're about being able to share the truth and about this emergency. But in addition to the rallies themselves, we've had the outpouring from the community, 150 new volunteers since Friday who have signed up, who've registered to be able to volunteer and help families in the Institute during this crisis. The the donations that have flooded in at this point to be able to help the refugee program itself. While there are naysayers out there, clearly I would maintain that the number of people who understand that this issue is more than what the face value of it seems to be is much larger in some ways than the opposition.
And Faizan, your organization, CARE, wants to continue this kind of momentum this weekend, as I understand it.
That's right. So there was a protest on Sunday at the airport, another one yesterday at Roy Blunt's office. And this Saturday at 1 o'clock, we're holding a very large rally and march with various organizations in the region in order to bring people together to speak out against the Muslim ban, but also to tie it with the effect it's having on immigrants, on Latinos, especially people in South America, and refugees as well. And I think the benefit of these types of orders is that it's waking people up and getting people more active and involved, as Anna's been saying. And I think that momentum is going to build as time goes on, because in the end, America is a country of immigrants. It is a country of refugees. And that is what our values and our beliefs are. And these orders go contrary to those values. And I think the more that this administration goes contrary to the value of the U.S., the more opposition they'll see building within the nation.
Jessica, you're the attorney in the room. I'm sure you're aware that Alderman Antonio French, who is running for mayor, we should certainly point out, has proposed that he would like to see St. Louis become a sanctuary city. Any realistic possibility of that?
I think there are obviously a lot of things to consider in whether it's possible. There's a lot of public opinion on both sides of the issue, obviously.
Sure.
I think in the St. Louis city there would be a lot of political support for that. Obviously, the threat of federal funding being revoked is a really real fear, and that's one of the things from the executive orders from Wednesday, that they're going to try and revoke federal funding. There are arguments that that part will be found unconstitutional, but of course, all of these court challenges will be a huge fight, and nothing is going to be easily. Stopped from the executive orders. I also think there's a lot that the city of St. Louis and the new mayor can do to make it a more welcoming and safe place for immigrants and the community at large as a result, even without having formal sanctuary city designation. There's a lot of training of police officers to actually respond to victims of crime, regardless of their immigration status, working with immigrants for U visas if they've been the victim of a crime and have been helpful in the enforcement of it, and then refusing to cooperate in using local law enforcement to do immigration enforcement. All of those would be steps that could be taken that wouldn't necessarily equal that formal designation of being a sanctuary city, but that could have a really real impact on the region.
Could you very briefly just tell folks what a sanctuary city is? Some folks may not fully know.
Yes. A sanctuary city is a city that doesn't cooperate with immigration enforcement whenever local law enforcement does come in contact with immigrants that could be subject to enforcement or removal orders.
And let me clarify also, in case people don't, it has nothing to do with the criminal code itself, because regardless of who you are, if you commit a crime under the criminal code, then you are subject to arrest and trial, et cetera, et cetera. But immigration is actually a part of the administrative legal code in this country. And so there's even separate judges, et cetera, for the immigration system itself. And so a sanctuary city formal designation really has to do with the administrative court process, which leads up to perhaps deportation, not with the criminal code and with being arrested and tried.
I want to bring another voice into this discussion again, someone that I spoke with yesterday. His name is Amin. He asked us to keep his last name withheld for reasons he's concerned about family and what have you. He came here from Iran in 2012 to pursue a master's in mechanical engineering. He now splits his time between work in Peoria, Illinois, and his home in St. Louis. When he got married last year, his mother and father-in-law were not able to come to the wedding due to the length of background check required for the visa. Recently, they finally received approval to visit the U.S., but now they're denied entry. I asked him, aside from the travel that we've talked about, what other implications Trump's executive order will have in his life?
Right now, with the bans and with the stuff that's going on, I'm kind of skeptical about staying here, because in one hand I see people that they're supporting this, and they think that people are from other countries are terrorists and they're here to harm them. But you know, it's this train of thought is not constitutional. But on the other hand, I see other people that are Americans that they're supporting people from those countries, and they don't like what's going on. And there are some people in government that they are actually working hard to kind of try to lift these executive orders. That makes me feel that I might not be in the wrong place. I cannot travel. I cannot go anywhere right now. I have a change of status case in USCIS because my my employer sponsored me to get my permanent residency, which is called green card. And I found out that all of the cases are suspended and they are not processing those cases anymore. And it's going to be like this for 90 days, and God knows what's going to happen after that.
All right. Well, that was Amin from Iran, who hasn't seen his Iranian family in 5 years. Jessica, let me come back to you again, banking on your legal background here. I get the impression that any paperwork that was in the pipeline up to the time of these executive orders is stalled, stopped now. People applying for green cards, people applying for other kinds of visas and what have you. That's dead in the water until this time frame is passed by.
That's correct for the time being. The executive order on its face, and initially we all thought it just applied to things through the Department of State and the Refugee Resettlement Program. So when people are applying for visas from abroad, either family members in the United States have filed for family members who are overseas, or those people who are overseas have gone and applied for temporary visas like visitors' visas. And then it was over the weekend, and then early this week when we started receiving reports that is extending to affirmative applications through U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. And so that includes people who are applying for work permits, for green cards, for citizenship, people who are applying for asylum. It's a wide variety of different types of cases, but the news that we've received is that that isn't completely stopped. It's not at all clear whether there's actually the authority from the executive order to extend that to all affirmative benefits. But right now, that does appear to be the way they're moving forward.
More questions than answers.
No kidding. And I think just one thing I want to leave your audience with is to remember that these are families. These are people's lives who are being adversely impacted by these executive orders, and it's creating a situation where we need to determine what type of society and what type of country do we want. Do we want a country that stands for the values of being a nation of immigrants, or do we want a country that looks at the other with suspicion and creates paranoid fear about that suspicion? You know, the executive orders don't target healthcare, they don't target obesity within this country, they don't target gun violence. They target one aspect that has the least amount of violence within this nation. I think that's wrong.
Right. Let me go. Time is beginning to wind down, and I'll start with you here again, Anna. What options do people have at this point who are caught in this web, or do they have any? Really?
Well, the sad part is that there are very few options, if at all, for most people who are caught in this system, and for people from these settling countries, there's virtually nothing. And so that is a real serious problem. I mentioned a few minutes ago in terms of the refugees how the 120-day delay is going to, in fact, increase the problems in the vetting system itself. They'll have to be revetted afterward. But the 120 days is also a case of life and death for some people, because one of the ways that you qualify for the U.S. refugee program, because we resettle the most vulnerable of refugees right now. There's so many you have to pick somehow or another, so we resettle the most vulnerable. 30% of the cases that we sponsored last year, for instance, had a medical issue that were associated with them. Now, you know, depending on the medical issue, right now I've heard there's a Somali kid who has cancer, for instance, in a refugee camp overseas. You've got all of these, or let's say somebody who has breast cancer, 120 days can be the difference between life and death in those situations. And so what I have been advocating for with regards to the refugee program is, yes, yes, vet. It's important for our nation to constantly be looking at and looking at how we upgrade and keep our people safe through reviewing the vetting system. But let that happen continuously with the admissions of individuals, particularly the refugees, because they are are so vulnerable. And there's nothing so far that's occurred that gives anyone any reason to believe that anybody who's coming in through the refugee program right now is a potential terrorist. So let the program continue and then vet on a parallel track.
Jessica, options, can you offer any?
I don't have any good options, but we have lots of advice for our clients and for other people who are facing these things. Certainly for all of our clients, they have to be aware, and for the immigrant community, that whether they have their green card or not and whether they're from the 7 affected countries or not, that leaving the country could have negative consequences. Part of the executive orders with the bans was that the list of countries could expand. It explicitly states that. And it would most likely go into effect immediately, just like these last ones. For pretty much everyone else, they have to be carrying their proof of lawful status or proof that they've been in the United States for at least 2 years, or they could be subject to deportation without any process, without the opportunity to see a judge. This has been standard for many years. And I think really just for the community at large, being able to show their solidarity and support in whatever way is going to be really important during this scary time.
We'll put links to all of your websites, by the way, on ours, so that if folks want to pursue it with any of you, they can do that at stlpublicradio.org. Faison, final thought about the options and advice?
Just to build off what Jessica said, two aspects. If you're overseas and you're from a majority Muslim country, it would be advisable to try to come back to the United States, especially if you're on a visa or green card holder. If you're a U.S. citizen who is Muslim, know that when you're come back to the United States, they have to let you into the United States. They might put you in for secondary screening. Don't answer any questions. Don't give them the password to your cell phone, to your laptop, and just say, I'm a U.S. citizen. I want an attorney. I'm not going to answer any questions. They will and have to let you back in. They can only deport you back to America. And the third advice is that as a community of people in this country, now is the time to raise your voice against this, because we've seen this before. It's happened to many communities, and now it's our turn to stand up and make sure these orders are resisted until they change.
All right. Well, I'm going to have to end it on that note. And I'm also going to point out one of our listeners has reminded that Tashara Jones, also running for mayor in the city of St. Louis, is an advocate for a sanctuary city. So we want to make sure that all the candidates get their equal time on this particular issue. Anna Crossland, thank you so much for being with us of the International Institute. Jessica Mayo of the Migrant and Immigrant Community Action Project, great to see you. Thank you for your legal expertise today. And Faison Syed, great to see you again. Executive Director of the Council on American Islamic Relations. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.